A little over 10 years ago, our guest looked at her everyday life and decided she wasn't as happy as maybe she could be. She, like many of us, felt she had ideas of what she'd one day do, like learn Photoshop, read more, have more fun, but that one day wasn't coming. She realized what many of us know but still struggle to put into action, that her life wasn't going to change unless she decided to do something about it, and that's how she started The Happiness Project. Gretchen Rubin blogs about happiness and has a podcast called Happier with Gretchen Rubin. She's the author of many books, including The Four Tendencies and Better Than Before. Today, she's joining us to talk about the 10th anniversary of her book, The Happiness Project, or Why I Spent a Year Trying to Sing in the Morning, Clean My Closets, Fight Right, Read Aristotle, and Generally Have More Fun. Gretchen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Me too. Well, remind us how you tackled this idea of being, you know, a little bit happier day by day.
Well, I decided to do a happiness project, and I decided it would be a year long because it seemed like a year was long enough to allow for real change, but also not so interminable that I would feel overwhelmed. And so I gave each month a theme, like energy or friendship, and then for each theme I came up with a handful of manageable concrete resolutions that I thought would make me happier in that area. And then I did them to see, well, can you make yourself happier? Could I make myself happier? And that was my happiness project.
A lot of people, I think, might have that long-term view. I will be happy when I fill in the blank, graduate, get a good job, retire, whatever that might be. And you tried to break it down into bits and pieces. What's the value of playing, I guess, in baseball terms, small ball with happiness?
Right. Well, what you're talking about is the arrival fallacy, the idea that people have this thought, well, if I just did arrive at a certain point, then I will automatically become happier. But often when we arrive at that point, we've already kind of gotten adjusted to it by the time it happens, so you don't sort of all of a sudden cross some finish line and become happy. I think you're right. It's more about doing the little things, thinking about, well, today, tomorrow, next month, next year, are these the things that make me happier? Would I be happier if I figured out a way to read more? Would I be happier if I figured out a way to get more sleep? Would I be happier if I found a way to see my friends more regularly? And the fact is, for a lot of us, there is a lot of low-hanging fruit. There's a lot of things we can do without spending a lot of time, energy, or money, which are, for most people, in short supply, that really do, over the long term, give you a very significant happiness boost.
Let's dig into a couple of those that you just mentioned, because I think they're ones that a lot of people might relate to. Part of adult life for a lot of people, myself included, is, yeah, you don't see, or many of us don't see our friends as often as we might like. How did you tackle that and try to make time and follow through with that idea?
No, and you're exactly right, because one of the things, one of the most common complaints for adults is that they don't see their friends, or they, maybe they've moved someplace and they don't have the friends that they once had, and so they have to figure out how to make new friends. Well, one thing I realized is that you need to show up, and that when people have a new baby, or they're having an open house, or there's going to be, a happy hour at work, part of it is that you really have to say to yourself, this is something that's going to make me happier. It's really worth my time and my energy. Even something like really saying a hello to somebody as you're walking into the office in the morning instead of just like staying glued to your screen. In the end, anything that deepens our relationships or broadens our relationships is going to be happier. And for relationships, you really, really do need to show up. One thing that I did that was sort of funny, and it's funny because it seems kind of calculating to put a number on it, but what I do now is when I'm entering into a new situation, like I'm going to have a new work relationship, or when my daughters were younger, when they would go to a new school, I would say, okay, my aim here is to make 3 new friends. So I was looking I'm meeting all these people at once. I'm like, okay, I need 3. How are you going to help me get to 3? Because what I realize is that it's easy to get into this thing where you're sort of like, you seem nice, but you don't really push it towards a friendship. Whereas if you're like, I really want to make a friend, it made me much more conscious of really trying to reach out to somebody and trying to turn it into a friendship, which is kind of funny to like have a numerical target, but it really helped me to make new friends.
Talking to Gretchen Rubin, talking about the 10th anniversary of the release of her book, The Happiness Project, and ways we can be a little bit happier day by day. And Gretchen, with that example and so many others from your book and your blog, a lot of it seems to come down to some effort up front to establish habits that do the things that are going to make us happier.
Absolutely. And in fact, after writing The Happiness Project and then Happier at Home, which was a happiness project that focused on home, I wrote a whole book called Better Than Before, all about habits, because you're exactly right. As I talked to more and more people and thought more and more about my own happiness, I realized a lot of the things that I wanted to do to be happier really were things that had to do with habits. Like, I wanted to exercise, not just like train for the marathon, but exercise regularly forever, not just give up sugar for Lent, but eat healthfully forever. Not just read, you know, like, oh, I'm going to read, you know, 10 books in 6 months or whatever, but I just want to do a lot of reading all forever. And so how do you, and the way to do that is to work on your habits, because habits, then you put a behavior on automatic pilot. You don't have to use willpower. You don't have to use self-control. You don't have to make decisions. And so understanding how to work on your habits makes it a lot easier to do the things that you know are going to make you happier, healthier, more productive, or more creative. But you have to, as you say, put the work in up front to build those things into your life in a regular way.
I wonder how you've dealt through all of this with unhappiness, because we can't be happy all the time. And I think sometimes people who have set a goal of happiness, if they're unhappy, it's even worse, because it's like, I'm supposed to be happy and I'm failing. How do you deal with the down moments that everybody's going to have?
Well, you know, that's a great point. And I think, you know, to have a life where you are perfectly happy all the time, it's not realistic, and I don't think it would even be a good life, because obviously there are times where it's absolutely appropriate to feel angry or bored or very sad or resentful. And in fact, these negative emotions are really, really helpful, because what they do is they show us that something in our life needs to change. If we never had experienced negative emotions, then we might not, you know, if you didn't feel guilty, then you might not behave yourself as well. And so these negative emotions are really useful as long as we take them into account and think, well, given the information that I'm getting about myself, what can I do differently to make myself happier? For example, envy is a very painful emotion. People don't like to feel envious. It's almost like an embarrassing thing to feel, but envy is a really helpful emotion to feel, because what it shows you is that somebody has something that you want. And so the question is, okay, well, if you're really envious of this person because they go on all these great trips, is there a way that you could travel more within your own circumstances? Because you want something they have, and maybe that's a helpful thing for you to know. Or if you're sad, part of loving someone and feeling attached is feeling sad if something happens to them. Of course, that's part of you know, the range of emotions.
So the same skills we develop and habit setting that we might do to get a little happier day by day and do the things that make us happy might also help us figure out the meaning of the things that make us unhappy?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think for all of us, the question is not like how can I be perfectly happy all the time, but it's, given my nature and my circumstances, am I as happy as I can be? So, you know, like, let's say your mother's in a hospital. Of course you're going to be sad, you're going to be worried. But it's like, okay, given that I'm in that circumstance, can I do the things that are going to help me be as happy as I can be? Because I'll probably manage the situation better. If I wear myself out, if I stay up all night, if I never eat, if I, you know, never give myself any relief, I'm probably going to burn myself out and run myself ragged and kind of get to be a wreck. Whereas if I say, okay, I need to give myself breaks, I need to make sure I get enough sleep, I need to make sure that I eat regularly, that's going to help us stay energized and be able to manage, you know, have the emotional wherewithal that we need to deal with a troubling situation.
We're talking to Gretchen Rubin, author, blogger, and podcaster, on the subject of happiness. We're talking about what she's learned in the 10 years since her book, The Happiness Project, was published. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have ways of doing some of the things Gretchen's talking about, finding time, finding motivation to do the things that ultimately make you happier? Maybe not perfectly happy, but a little happier. And have you tried some of Gretchen's advice over the years from her books or blogs or podcast? Or do you have a question for Gretchen? Do you need some advice on how to put this into action? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. We're talking to Gretchen Rubin. It's the 10th anniversary of her book, The Happiness Project. She blogs and has a podcast as well on the subject of happiness. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you found a way to be a little happier in your day-to-day life? What did you do? How did you think about it? How did you motivate yourself? If you've used Gretchen's advice over the years from her many books, from her blog or podcast, love to hear from you. Or if you have a question for Gretchen, we'd love to hear from you about that too. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. So Gretchen, we talked about how you in part were developing habits. Do you feel like for you, they took the stuff you started doing 10 plus years ago? It's just, you know, it's stuff you do without thinking about it now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's funny, in Better Than Before, I developed this personality framework that divides people into four personality types. And then I wrote a whole book about it called The Four Tendencies. And one of the things I learned from that process is I'm the kind of person who finds it pretty easy to form habits. So that was like an insight that I had backwards, which is, oh, I see why it was pretty easy for me to make and stick to these resolutions, because turns out I'm an upholder. And that's the kind of person who finds it pretty easy to form habits.
Yeah, you talked to us a while back about the four tendencies. I remember there was one group, I think you called them the rebels, where don't tell me what to do. The rules, even if maybe the rules I'm trying to set for myself, the existence of rules makes me want to push back. I don't want to do stuff even if it's for my own good. How does that quarter of the population do good stuff for themselves?
Well, there even few, there aren't an equal number of all the tenants.
Okay.
They're not even 25%. Well, for rebels, because they resist outer and inner expectations, the way they can do what they want to do is first they can think about their identity. They do it because, hey, I do this because I'm an athlete. I do this because I'm a strong, vital person and I want to take care of my body. I love being outside. That's how they might get themselves to do something like exercise or, you know, I'm an artist. I want to put my work out into the world. That's why I'm going to paint every day. And then they can also think about the consequences of doing something or not doing something. I'm doing my physical therapy exercises, not because the doctor told me to, but because I want to be pain-free and independent. Like, I don't want the consequences of not doing it. So even though I don't want to, I'm going to suck it up and do it because that's what I want.
Can they, like, imagine or think about a real nemesis in their lives and think, ha, everything I do good for myself is sticking it to them?
That might, because they do often love a challenge, like, oh, you think an old guy like me can't quit smoking? I'll show you. So if you're like, if they were thinking of it some nemesis and they're like, oh, that person thinks I can't run the marathon in 2019. Well, I will do it. But if people are curious about this, they can take a quiz at quiz.gretchenrubin.com. And I think 1.7 million people now have taken this free quiz. If someone's like, huh, am I a rebel? Or an upholder. I'm an upholder. That's my tendency.
I don't remember what I was. I took the test. I wasn't a rebel, strangely. I don't know. Even though my catchphrase is, don't tell me what to do.
Weren't you a questioner?
I think I was.
Good. I think you were a questioner.
So I'm in a good job because I mostly ask questions.
That's good.
Now, since you came out with the first book and the other books, you've had a lot of interaction with your readers through your website, back and forth, I assume, responses to your blog and podcast. What kind of creative things have you heard from your fans about things they've done to adapt your advice in their own lives?
Oh, we've gotten so many fantastic ideas. One of the best ideas that we got was from a listener who suggested, a lot of times people, it's new year, new you, people want to make New Year's resolutions, but then for a lot of people that sort of doesn't appeal. Either they're not successful, or it just doesn't appeal to them as a way. But something that really caught people's attention was the idea of doing 18 for 2018, or, you know, now we would do 19 for 2019, which is to make a list of things, and they could be tiny, like try every ice cream at my local ice cream shop, or it could be something big like, you know, renovate the basement or switch careers. But you make a list, and then the idea is that as time goes through, as the year rolls on, you try to cross as many things off the list as you can. And the funny thing about this list is that people seem to have much more fun with it than they do with a typical New Year's resolution list or, you know, like handful of things people do for New Year's resolutions. And it seems to unleash something in them that it makes it more fun to tackle things that have been kind of weighing on them for years. I don't know why it is doing it in this form. Seems to be much more playful and fun for people, but this was something that really caught their attention. And our attention, Elizabeth, my co-host Elizabeth, my sister and I, both really got into 18 for 2018. Another thing that we talked about on the podcast that I think was my idea, but that people really loved, was to choose a signature color. This is just kind of whimsical and silly, but it's like, what's your, you know, and then if you're buying a cell phone case or, you know, an exercise mat or something, you use your signature color. And people just got very fired up about their signature colors. It's just something silly and fun to make your day a little more joyful.
Talking to Gretchen Rubin, author of The Happiness Project, among other books. You can check out her podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin. She's helping us be a little happier. Now, in that list of those 18 for 2018, there's the try the ice cream flavors, okay, doable and fun. Find a new career. Okay, so yeah. If we have this big goal like this, it's easy to say words like, I'm going to make this big change in my life. How do we, operationalize something like that?
Well, I think the thing always to do with whatever we're trying to do is to think about concrete, manageable steps. Because you're right, it's easy to stay very abstract and so big that it just kind of vanishes into the clouds, whether it's something like choose a new career or something like enjoy the moment. You know, you're like, what does that even mean? So for a lot of people, it's helpful to really break it down into steps so that you can see, okay, this is manageable, step by step, this is the order of things. Maybe I'm going to go through and, like, if I need to make phone calls, I'm going to fill in those phone numbers now, or I'm going to find those addresses or those URLs now, and so that when I'm ready, I can just execute. I don't have to waste a lot of time. Now, when people talk about habits or they talk about something like choosing a new career, they often say that you should keep it, like, very, very small steps. And that's the way people do best. What I will say from my experience is that's true for some people, and, like, they want to make small steps, like do one thing every day, or, like, try, instead, if you want to exercise more, go around the block one time and then kind of build. That's great advice for some people, but some people want to go big or go home. They want to do something transformative all at once. They get kind of bored and lose interest if they're making incremental change. So if you feel like you want to take a week vacation and, like, blow it out and, like, rethink your entire career in that week, don't have anybody tell you that that's the wrong way to do it. You should do it in the way that's right for you. Some people like to do a little bit over the long term. Some people like to just really, really focus and do something in a big way. And there's no right way or wrong way. It's just whatever works for you as you're approaching something that you're trying to get done.
Well, here's someone looking for some advice. Rio emails, should I take a job that pays well but that I don't enjoy so I can shorten the overall amount of time I have to work, or should I find a job I'm interested in but may pay poorly? Well, there's a lot of detail we're not getting into there, but broad strokes, Gretchen, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is kind of a false choice because it isn't a situation where there are two jobs in the world. One of these jobs hasn't even been defined. What is this second job? I think the thing to do is to say, do I have to choose? Maybe I can find a job that pays well and that I do enjoy. Sometimes we, to make our lives simpler, we kind of try to distill it into, like, one is A and one is B and never the twain shall meet. But very often we can have A and B. And especially since this doesn't sound like it's a choice between two options. It's a choice between two theoretical options, in which case, in practice, there might be something that you're not anticipating. So I think don't try to decide up front what you want, but to go look for the job that you really desire.
Also raises the issue of deferring happiness. The assumption here is that I'll be done working, and then I'll be retired, and then I'll be happy, which maybe isn't the way to approach the problem.
Right. Well, again, it's the arrival fallacy. It's like, oh, if as long as I get there. But one of my I have 12 personal commandments that I write about in the Happiness Project, and one is from my father, who always says, enjoy the process. And the problem is with life, we never know how things are going to end up. We don't know if we're going to achieve our aim or if we're even going to reach our aim. Like, stuff happens all the time. But if you enjoy the process, then you've been happy along the way. And so it's very important to enjoy the process. Life is much happier if you enjoy the process. Now, of course, financial security is something that's very, very valuable. I would never say that it's not an important factor in happiness, because certainly one of the greatest luxuries that money buys is the freedom from having to worry about money. So it's not that there's no place for that in thinking about, well, what do I want my life to be going forward? But you don't want to just say, like, well, this, I have to think about this in isolation, and that should trump every other value, because all these things are connected to each other.
Let me hit you in our last couple of minutes, Gretchen, with I think something that probably a lot of people feel, especially in the digital age. We spend time, I spend time, you know, I'm looking at news articles on the phone and then look at something on the computer and do this and that, frittering away time. And looking back, I'm like, that didn't make me happier. How can we jog ourselves out of that and consciously do something that we enjoy?
Well, that is so important, and people talk about that all the time. And I think to remember that technology is a great servant, but it's a bad master. And we have to reassert, you know, we are the boss of technology. And so I think it's to really be mindful of, like, when is it that I tend to fritter my time away, or when do I see that I'm spending time in ways that in the end don't make me happy? And maybe that's turning off notifications. Maybe it's turning your phone to grayscale so that it's in black, white, and gray, so it's much less appealing. Maybe it's literally putting it in away from you, like on a high shelf behind a closed door for certain hours of the day, so that you can't get to it unless there's sort of an emergency. Maybe there's apps that you want to delete from your phone, so you have to only use it on desktop because you think, well, I'm not going to check it on desktop all the time. Or maybe you delete it on desktop and only check it on your phone, depending on how you use it. But I think the thing to do is to really remember that we are the masters of this, and not to just default into whatever it is that is being offered to us, but really to think, what do I want to get out of this? There are many, many wonderful, valuable things that can come to us through technology, as long as we use it mindfully. And remember that everything has an opportunity cost. And so if you're spending hours scrolling through a news feed, then that may be a novel that you're not reading, and you'd rather be reading the novel.
Guilty.
So figure it out. Yeah, there you go, right?
Gretchen, thanks a lot. It's always fun to talk to you.
Thank you.
Gretchen Rubin blogs about happiness and has a podcast called Happier with Gretchen Rubin. She's the author of books including The Four Tendencies, Better Than Before. She joins today to talk about the 10th anniversary of the book that started a lot of it. It's called The Happiness Project. You could still email your happiness stories, ideas@wpr.org.